Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a growing network of people who believe the center of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ, and that learning to take love seriously is vital for how we practice discipleship, mission, and leadership. The Gravity Leadership Podcast explores, in practical ways, how to root our lives and our leadership in this love that holds all of us and everything together.
All right. Welcome, everyone, to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Sternke, and I'm here with co-host Matt Tebbe.
Yeah.
We're both co-hosts.
You don't know this about Ben. Why would you? But Ben recently started shaving his head.
I did.
He's got a good dome.
I was a little insecure about it. I wasn't sure if I would... I wasn't sure what my head looked like under there. But I did have this bald spot kind of growing in the, you know, the back of my head, which I never see because I don't have eyes back there and I don't ever look at my, you know, back in the mirror. But, and so I was sort of unaware of it. So, but yeah, I just got tired of trying to manage, haircuts and scheduling stuff during COVID. And I thought, you know what, let's give it a try. I have been encouraged to give it a try by you and several other friends. And so I did.
Yeah.
Kind of shaved it real close. My head is a little bit colder now. I wear stocking caps sometimes just because I'm like, ooh, it's chilly. But it's very low maintenance. So.
Yeah, it looks good, man. Just want to affirm this is...
Thank you.
It may be in the top five things that have happened in 2021.
It could be.
it's been quite a year so far.
It has been quite a year so far. That is true.
Yeah.
So, yes, but we're excited... to get into this podcast here with Timothy and Madai McCain, who are a kind of a traveling evangelist couple in the Pentecostal charismatic church world. And they primarily minister. Timothy's a African-American man. Madai is Latina. And they minister primarily in white spaces. And so there's a lot here to learn, I think, from them. In terms of what they've encountered, especially since, especially in the past year in 2020.
Yeah.
So, looking forward to it. This is part of our series that we just started. We had Esau on last week, Esau McCulley, talk about Reading While Black. That started this new series that we're doing on power and race and gender in the church.
Yes.
So we're trying to tackle just a couple minor things in 2021 here. Just a couple small things.
Yes.
Power, race, gender.
Yep.
In the church. So yeah, that's it.
They have some great
stories.
Listen
up. Yeah, they do.
In particular,
this is a good couple.
Yeah, in particular how the election of Donald Trump and the killing of George Floyd, how all these cultural factors have changed the way that the predominantly white churches they minister in, how it impacts them, how they experience it. So
yes,
they're great people. And commend this interview.
Yep. Let's get into it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Timothy and Madayi McCain, welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's great to be able to spend some time with you today, talking a little bit with you in our new series that we're doing on race and power and gender and how all those things intersect in the world of the church, specifically leading in the church. I'm assuming most of our listeners are probably not familiar with you guys, so maybe we could start with just some introductions. Madayi, would you be up for just introducing you and Timothy and kind of what you guys do together?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Madayi McCain. My husband is Timothy McCain. We actually have a ministry called TMM Ministries, and we get to travel all over the world and be able to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ, which is such an honor. And it's so fun because we get to see different cultures, eat different food. So that's really cool. So that's what we do. My husband and I, we have been getting involved a lot more on social media, YouTube, podcasts, anything you can think of. We are trying to spread the gospel in every way that we possibly can. We have been traveling for almost a decade, which is super crazy to me. I'm like, how old am I?
Is that possible?
Right? Yeah. I'm like, when did this happen?
Yeah.
So we've been traveling for almost a decade. We have had the honor of doing lots of conventions, gone to lots and lots of churches. Literally, I was thinking the other day, I was telling him, I'm like, we have ministered to hundreds and thousands of people over a decade. Wow. And we have seen so many salvations, and I'm so in awe of what the Lord has done in our lives. So that's who we are, and that's what we do.
That's awesome, Madayi. Thank you for that. You guys primarily travel and minister in the Pentecostal world, which is where we connected with you guys. And Timothy, maybe you want to share a little bit of that story about how you connected with Gravity Leadership through our friend Josh Hawkins, and kind of why we're having this conversation today. It's based on a conversation from a few weeks ago.
Oh, yes. So it's amazing how God knows our tomorrow while it was still our yesterday, right? And I met Pastor Josh Hawkins. We were youth pastors in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that.
Years and years ago. And we were friends then, but little did I know that God will use him to throw a lifeline in my life while in a season of my life where I feel like I was drowning with so many questions with in different kind of seasons that this year has brought. And so I went up to Pastor Josh Hawkins Church. It's in Fremont, Indiana. Incredible church. Anybody listening, you got to holler at that church. It's amazing. He's a dope pastor. And so we were chit-chatting and about what's going on and how we really feel like all sorts of ways. And we're going to elaborate in a little bit. But he sent me a Gravity Leadership Podcast, and I fell in love. I literally binged. listened to so many episodes, and it felt like I was finally eating a meal that was satiating my appetite, because I felt like I had questions, but it seemed that I was the only one who had them. So it was incredible and encouraging to see white people having these type of depth of conversations, because again, in the space that we find ourselves in. Anyway, I just fell in love. Grab Leadership Podcast, y'all are amazing. Man, Matt and Ben, y'all are dope people, so I'm so thankful for y'all.
that's why we had you on today. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Maybe Timothy should do the bumper for the podcast.
Add some really encouraging things. No, that's super encouraging. And we had a really, really encouraging conversation with you, Timothy, while you were coming through Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. And we actually lived, my little joke earlier about Fort Wayne, like I actually lived in Fort Wayne for 15 years, and we lived there all at the same time, me and Josh. And probably you too, Marie. Were you there as well? Yeah, yeah. So anyway, we were all there. Fort Wayne's a big place, so obviously we didn't know each other. But the Christian world there is a kind of a small world, so I'm actually surprised that I didn't know who you were. But yeah, I that is super encouraging to hear you say that. And we do connect with a lot of people who are asking questions and wanting sort of to be able to have conversations like the ones we're having now about race and power and gender and how all those things affect our life in the church rather than just sort of brushing them aside. So I wonder if we could get into that and elaborate on that a little bit. You said that you felt like you were drowning at a certain point. Do you want to just elaborate on that and get specific? What do you mean? What was the lack that you were sensing in the spaces that you were inhabiting and what were you needing?
I recognized very quickly that the church, I felt as a whole, and for many people that I've known, have shifted directions of who Jesus really is. I felt like we were pimping the cross and whoring grace for political and whatever type of gain, and seeing people gathering together with cross measuring contests instead of getting into the place of standing and fighting. I don't know if that's too real, too honest. My bad.
Dude, this is the right space for it.
I'm just glad I'm not the one saying the most audacious things on the podcast today. This is great.
And so I'm like, man, where is this Jesus that I've been preaching? And now in a place, in a space where I finally, as a black man, I felt like the nation was asking the question, was at a place where they were inquisitive regarding the pain, some people at least, the pain of the black and brown and minority communities.
Yeah.
And when I personally finally felt like I had an opportunity to share about my experiences, it was greeted with silence. It was greeted with negativity. It was greeted with so much hostility that it blew me away. Mm-hmm. And I really felt like that, man, all these years of ministry being in this places of, I call it like a missionary in the white community. In some places I felt like, well, I feel like they fell more, they loved me as a black man, but didn't care less about black people. And at the same time, wanting me just to preach. And so what people got to like the whole, just George Floyd and everything that has happened, as tragic as it was Tuesday for us. And so for the longest time, longing
like,
for their...
Like just another Tuesday.
Yeah, just another... Like,
yeah, this happens all the time. We're used
happens
to it.
Happens all
yeah.
the time.
Yeah.
And so where it's finally where you can feel like you could go to your pastor and be pastored in this area of healing across the board around the nation, it seemed like those spaces were silent. Hmm. And so, yeah, so it felt like I was drowning where I literally had to confront... man, just I felt my whole community, everything that I have found peace and security in was shaken, and didn't know where I could go and where I could find healing and find peace, because it's different, man. If you gotta persuade the one who wants to hear about your pain that your pain is legitimate and validates their attention, that's not a safe place to go.
No.
So, yeah, so when I came across, man, y'all's podcast, I felt like God threw me a life. That's that little circle thing to throw in the ocean and the.
Yeah, life preserver.
Life preserver. Yeah. And so, it's been crazy up in these streets, fam.
Yeah, I wonder, Marie, like as you've been in these spaces with Timothy, like what have you noticed? How have you experienced maybe this? You know, Timothy, the comment, these people love me as a black man, but didn't care anything about black people. Mm-hmm. And the way that disoriented you in these communities, maybe separated you or revealed a division for you that maybe was more crystallized than it used to be. Mm-hmm. Marie, I'm wondering how you experienced that over the last several months.
So it's been a kind of interesting. I think I wasn't as aware of what was happening or in the country. I am actually from Mexico, but I grew up in the States. So my situation is a little bit different. I noticed different things than he does. Mm-hmm. And I guess it just, awaken this reality that being a black man, it can be dangerous. You know, I mean, I've always known that some, you know, all this stuff can happen. But when it started to really happen and the media started to put more attention to it, I was like, wow, this is the reality. Like, when I first got married with him, we did a couple of things. Like, we would go out, right? We would go up to Indiana. We would drive up to different churches. And a lot of times he would just get stopped by the police just randomly. And I'm over here like, what is going on? He's like, oh, it's because I'm driving while black. And I'm like laughing like, yeah, sure. But the more, yeah, like, sure, that's why. But I'm like, the more that, you know, we've been married for almost, like I said, we're almost going to be married almost 10 years. Oh, yeah. So I started to notice it more and more and more and more. Mm-hmm. I do remember like situations where, like, again, we were driving through the cornfields of Indiana and yes, people would just slur out the N-word to him.
Wow.
Like,
wow,
out of nowhere. They didn't even know who he was. And I'm like, but this whole season has brought so much more information, so much more awakening to me personally of how I'm gonna have to raise my son, because my son is gonna be a black Latino. He's a Blaxican, that's what we call him. Yeah. He's Blaxican. And so, because we both of our cultures, we both have experienced racism from different places.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, all this literally stirred so much more in me, and like having conversations with, we have never had these conversations. Not like this. We've had to have raw conversations between each other because he's very concerned. He's like, you need to understand that if our son gets stopped by police, I have to teach him how to handle the situation. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, and I'm like, no, what are you talking about? But now that everything is exploded in the media, I'm like, wow, this is so real. This could totally happen to anybody.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know, it's been difficult. I saw him suffer through this whole season. Because he wanted to talk to somebody that could understand. And there was nobody there. You know, some people just totally, completely just shun him because he wanted to talk about the situation. He needed somebody to talk to, somebody that would understand, somebody that would hear, you know, and it was really sad to see that the people that said that were with us, they kind of just turned their backs on us. Yeah. Because we were talking about this stuff. People need to hear about this. This is real. Yeah. Racism is real. I've experienced racism myself, you know? Yeah. And I think that people, well, I have heard people say racism is not real. Yeah. It's not real. We're making it worse or stuff like that. I'm like, are you kidding me? Yeah. I grew up, I'm like, I experienced racism myself. I've been called names that I'm not going to mention on here. But, you know, because I am a Latino woman, so...
Yeah.
Is, I don't know, this whole season has been so enlightening. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Enlightening in all the worst ways. You know, I'm hearing you guys say that there's this community that you've spent 10 years ministering with and to, you know, just to sort of feel the betrayal, almost abandonment, I hear you guys describing. And I want to come back. The interesting thing that I've heard you say, I've heard other people say, like churches who don't really want to wrestle with this stuff, just preach. That comment that you mentioned earlier, just preach. And I thought that's so interesting because it's so interesting because what I hear you describing is that's what you wanted to do. You want to preach. You know, you want to talk about the gospel of Jesus Christ and how it affects the way that we are with one another, right?
Yes.
And how it can actually maybe heal some of these ways that we're pitted against each other, right? You know, all these kinds of things. So you're actually wanting to preach the gospel, but what they mean by just preach is something very specific, and it actually means something more like don't preach these things.
Yeah.
We want a certain white version of the gospel, maybe, or something like that. You know what I mean?
I had this picture. I know you guys like this because you're Pentecostals. I had this picture, as you said that, Timothy, of Paul going to Peter in Galatians 2 and checking him because he wasn't eating with the Gentiles. And Peter going, whoa, 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 dude, just preach the gospel. Just back up. Back up with your fancy schmancy intersectionality here, Paul. And just preach the gospel. So here's what's psychotic about this, Timothy, and I'd love to hear you talk about it, is that there's a version of the gospel that is accepted and agreed upon in many white churches and white spaces that lacks the justice and the kingdom of God in it. Mm-hmm. It actually, you want to talk about old time gospel? It lacks the old time Antioch gospel that Paul preached to Peter. How do you navigate that? Like, what do you say, Timothy, when you want to talk about how the kingdom of God and being a black man in America intersects with the gospel of Jesus, and somebody says, no, just give them the justification by faith. Mm. What do you do?
I want to talk about this. So here we go.
Give the evangelist some room.
So here we go. So y'all remember when LeBron James was speaking up about all these issues, things of nature, and some lady just said, man, just shut up and dribble. Mm-hmm. And people were like applauding and like, man, that is right, man. You just supposed to play sports or whatever. And all in this whole, our nation, family, people of color, minorities, and has been involved, right, in whether sports or in doctors, whatever, we're present, right? And so, but it's sad that the moment where someone needs to speak up regarding the matters that pertain to minorities, people of color, and then that moment is wrong. So I have a hard time hearing someone say, tell LeBron James to shut up and dribble, because to me, when someone tells me to be quiet, you're just telling me to shut up and preach. You're telling that musician that creates an atmosphere for your church service to shut up and play. You're telling that person of color that is hurting, but you're not giving a space to hear, to hurt in silence. At the same time, gathering together in your Sunday morning services, asking God for a move of God, asking God to heal our nation. But to your definition, heal our nation is everyone to shut up and be thankful that they're in America. And so,
which we've heard people
Lord,
say that.
Mercy.
Oh my Lord.
And so if I just don't believe that the healing that people that we need isn't silence. Mm-mm. Right? We can't heal what we conceal. We heal what we confront. The Bible says blessed are the peacemakers, not the peacekeepers. Peacekeepers is not even right. Peacekeeper is someone who said, well, let me not say anything. Let me not rock the boat because I don't want to offend anybody because I don't whatever. But the problem is we give our thumbs up to through our own silence, and we welcome the same issues. But what we're trying to do just as speaking up is to do the work of Jesus, to be peacemakers. And sadly, in order to make peace, attention is necessary. And sometimes that attention hurts.
Yes.
So it has been an absolute alarming season to where to see how people literally can create different personalities or different images of Jesus.
Yeah.
It is alarming to me of how we can misconstrue God's name. We can create, like back in the day, in the 90s, we had these bracelets, what would Jesus do? WWJD. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that would make sense at a time if we all had the same definition of Jesus.
Yes.
So you can't tell me what would Jesus do and yell at the Mexican speaking Spanish to get out my country. You can't tell me believing that's what your Jesus would want, right? Yeah. And it's alarming to see where there is a complete bunch of different Jesuses created in the factory of man, man-made images of Jesus that God has nothing to do with.
Yes. Yeah, man. I share that. And it's almost blatant, isn't it? I mean, some of the quotes that we heard in the news, you know, that kind of thing. It was just like, you know, people would try to quote even like things that Jesus literally said to Christians who seemed to be doing otherwise. And they were like, yeah, but they basically argue with Jesus. You know, they basically said, yeah, that's all fine and good. But, you know, how many times are you supposed to turn the cheek? You know, like, come on, you know, like at some point they almost... You know, it's like the jig is up. It's like you're not following Jesus anyway. Yeah, no, I think that's really a keen insight. I've been thinking about this lately that it is ironic, like you said, for us to pray for a move of God, but then refuse to repent, mm-hmm. you know, when the preacher comes through and shows us our sin, right? I wonder if this is how principalities work, right? I once heard a pastor say, it shocked me at the time, but I think it's true. About 5 seconds after he said it, I was like, I think that's true. He said, white supremacy is the founding principality of the United States.
Mm. Oh, snap.
Ooh, come on,
he just said it. He started his talk like that. Wasn't that amazing? He's an Asian American pastor. He started his talk like that. White supremacy is the founding principality. And then he went on to talk about how that works. But it just strikes me that of like, this is how like demonic principalities probably operate. Like they operate primarily, they're hidden until you poke them, until you bring it out into the light, and then all hell breaks loose, mm-hmm. right? You lose speaking gigs and people tell you to shut up and preach. And
absolutely.
Right? That's true.
Mm. Yeah, man. Mm. Yeah. I don't know. I don't have a question in there. I think I'm just resonating with you.
I was going to say though, it's to me, it baffles me that we are the church and we understand that when people come and they have deep rooted things in their heart, that we have to expose them for them mm-hmm. to be able to uproot these things. We know mm-hmm. this, even in the Pentecostal circles, right. Like we're always talking about, you know, Zozos being whole, being made new, all that stuff. Yeah. I'm like, but when it comes to things like racism and all this stuff that's been happening, we don't want to dig the ground and go yeah. deeper and reveal those roots because we want to pretend like they're not there. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm mm-hmm. saying? I've literally yes. heard people yes. that have said racist comments or actually typed with their, you know, Facebook warriors, they've typed racist comments on people's, you know, Facebooks and then proceed to say that they're not racist. I'm like, right. you just literally said something so racist. Delivered.
Yeah.
Right. I went to a church not too long ago and it was the most, I honestly almost cried myself there because I just went to visit and the preacher, the pastor went up there and, you know, he was like, well, we're never going to push our agenda on you. And I was like, okay, he's starting off good. Great. This is awesome. Finally, I get to hear the gospel, not all this other stuff, fluffy stuff and political stuff. Awesome. We're going to hear the gospel today. And he proceeded to make one of the most racist comments I have ever heard. And my friend, who is a black woman, came with me. We both looked at each other and I was like, hey, I think I'm ready to go. And yeah. I just got up and left. I could not. I'm like, and this is what we're doing in this hour. And it's so heartbreaking. I literally almost cried.
And the church applauded.
Yeah. And yeah. And the church. Yeah. Well, the funny thing is I looked around the church. I don't know. I mean, we live in Florida now and we're very, very multicultural down here. So we have, you know, Puerto Ricans. We have every culture you can think of, Cubans, you know, and the church was very multicultural. And all the Spanish people were quiet and they just stared while other people were like, amen, pastor, amen. I'm like, he literally just said one of the most racist comments about a black woman on a microphone and everybody applauded. I'm like, this is what we've created the gospel to be. Is this what the altar is for? Is this what the people, you know, what is going on?
Yes.
Anyway, that was sad.
Yeah. Yes, it's disturbing. I think a lot of people probably listening are feeling the same thing, right? That we're sort of grieved and amazed, alarmed, as you said, about what's happening and about what we're seeing. I wonder how we respond to this, right? As people who are trying to follow Jesus, trying to continue to hold out the gospel of Jesus, in all of its justice and reconciliation. One of the responses for some people is, you know, forget the church. That's happening left and right now. People are leaving the church because of this stuff. They're like, this is...
Well, because they go and they hear a racist joke from the pulpit.
Right. And they're like, I can't do this anymore.
With this, Jesus.
I can't do it. Yeah, I don't want anything to do this. So that's one, and I completely understand that. You know, and other people maybe in your position would be like, all right, well, let's, you know, let's find a new way to make money and let's just get out of this thing. This is too hurtful, too hard. But you guys are not doing that. From what our previous conversation with you, Timothy, you indicated that. So I wonder if you guys can talk about how are you responding when these things happen to you? How are you responding in your ministry? How are you responding in your family? And maybe there'd be some wisdom in that for us and our listeners to know how we can respond in our families and our churches when we see these things and hear these things.
Yeah, I think it's important first and foremost to realize that the church is not a restaurant, right? And we have treated Sunday mornings, Wednesday gatherings like that. We treat it like a restaurant. We come into church hungry, and then we snap at Jesus like he's our waiter, saying, "Fill me up, fill my bottle, fill my cup, fill my plate. I'm done with this. Take it away." And so then we leave the church full of ourselves. But we don't exercise. So thus we become a immobile or obese bride that yells from their lazy boys, but not up doing anything. But church is not a restaurant. It's a school of culinary arts, right? It's a place where we come to learn how to cook. To learn how to cook grace, to learn how to cook hope, to learn how to cook justice and peace and compassion and love and outreach. Yeah. But everybody knows every good cook tastes your food. You taste your own food. Every good cook, before you, do I add this season? Do I need a little bit of this? Do I personally need some more grace? Do I personally need some more love? But the issue is now that I feel like there is a gospel being a message. I can't even say gospel. A message being preached in the church, where there's no self-examination, is that people are corralling around what they hate, not what they're for. Mm-hmm. And so thus there's no inward search of God. Know me. If there's any offense way in me, show me, as scripture says. Yeah. So the church is never meant to be a restaurant, a school of culinary arts. And further and foremost, we're intended to be meals on wheels. Right, bring me a food truck right now. And fam, them joints
taco
are amazing.
Taco sounds great.
And we're always been intended to be the individual to go on the highways and byways and to go into our neighborhoods. And so what the problem is that we have so elevated the pulpit that we made it a pedestal. We have so intertwined and misconstrued honor that we created worship. And so thus we leave these Sunday morning experiences not with the mission, with the memory. And so I believe what is so vital in this hour that we get back to what we read in scripture, in the book of Acts especially, where they went from house to house breaking bread and the church multiplied. And so I firmly believe we can get so much more done around a dinner table than we can a tweet. We can get so much done around a coffee shop than a soapbox. And so what we're trying to do, what we knew we had to do, is making sure that we are trying to have these conversations in smaller circles, in more intimate places,
right.
To help equip and inspire individuals to take their mantle, their responsibility to preach the gospel. The message has never changed. To go preach the word, be in season, out of season, correct, rebuke, and encourage, with great faith. But here's the last part: with careful instructions. We wanna again, stop me if I'm talking too long, but we want to that last part. People are more infatuated with the cut than they are with the mending. They want the correction. We want to correct. We want to preach. We want to speak at this particular against this particular movement, this particular thing. But there's no careful instructions. And so now people leave with anger and they leave confused. They don't leave discipled. They don't leave educated. They leave flustered. And so I think just like a mailman, right? Amazon, it was just Cyber Monday, and maybe people we broke, so we didn't buy anything. But but maybe the struggle's real, fam. People canceling us left and right. But but that won't change, fam. This will change. Yeah. And so anyway, so when you order something from Amazon, you order something from the mail. The mailman, they deliver the package. They understand their responsibility is not to open the package. It's not responsibility to the mailman. Their responsibility is to make sure it arrives safely at the proper destination. And so I think we need every single person, every Christian, every minister, every person who's longing to share Jesus to protect the package. we are throwing information, we are throwing news, we are throwing information everywhere, not giving any attention to its content, to protecting the content, or making sure it is effectively being delivered to the one whose name is on it. And so people are getting broken good, broken packages, broken TVs, blaming the manufacturer, blaming the creator when it was the handlers who's misconstruing his messages. Yeah. So we as Christians, we have to get back to the raw elementary responsibilities of being like Jesus, preaching Jesus, and sharing Jesus, and it includes justice.
This podcast is brought to you by Gravity Leadership Academy, our 10-month online training intensive for Christian leaders who want to root their life and leadership in God's love and bring lasting transformation to their culture. In Gravity Leadership Academy, you'll learn the real-life practicalities of how to notice God's presence and activity in and around you so you can participate more fully in God's life and mission and open up space for those around you to do so too. We've worked really hard to make this training in missional leadership practical and doable. To find out more about Gravity Leadership Academy, visit gravityleadership.com/academy.
Maria, I want to get back to something you said because I want to ask this question about how you guys handle this. You know, as you drive down those country roads in Indiana, born and raised in Indiana here, in Indianapolis, and let me tell you, I heard growing up, we would talk about racism and we would talk about civil rights, but the tone and the frame of it was in school was always like, think about how bad the South was back then. Hmm. And there was this undertone of congratulating ourselves for that we weren't the South, and about as a country, how far we'd come, you know. But then these people in my class had go home and their parents were shouting the N-word at black people that drove down the street, right? So one of the things that strikes me about this is that most racists don't think they're racist.
Right. Right.
And I'm including me in that too. And that's really disorienting because if white supremacy is true, and if it centers whiteness and white experience and white culture and white perspective, then to have something as heinous, as bad, as racism be not only a part of your life, but a part of the lens through which you see all of reality and not know it. Like that's like the worst thing that could ever happen to you. Like the worst thing that ever happened to you is that you would be that bad and not realize you're that bad. Right. And I'm sure you guys have experienced that. One of the reasons we're doing this series is because, I've just decided to assume that the worst parts of my racism, I haven't discovered yet. I've just decided to assume that, and there's no way for me to get in touch with that unless I'm open to being wrong.
Right.
Like, really open to being wrong. How do you guys navigate close relationships with people that would be, you know, shocked that they were racist? You know, it's one thing like to be a Dolphins fan and hang out with a Chiefs fan and have like this funny back and forth. It's another thing to be a black man hanging out with a blatant racist and him just, or her not knowing it. Mm-hmm. and or not caring. Like, how do you guys deal with that? Especially maybe going into churches where you see that prevalent and they've asked you to serve them or they've asked you to bring something for
you
them.
Know what's funny? I've literally have had ministers ask me, because you know, I tell them I was born in Mexico, right? One of the first things that one time I got was, so are you illegal? I'm like, yeah, nice to meet you too. What else? Would you like my social? Like, it was seriously, that's what, and I was shocked and I was hurt. I was like, this is reality. And they've said stuff to him that I'm like, what in the world? I will say this though.
I want to throw hands.
Yeah, because I'm like, what?
But not prayer.
I'm like, anyways, I think they think they're being funny. I mean, you know, we joke around stuff like that. You know, we like to joke around and stuff. But some things you just don't ask, and some things you don't say to people, minorities. It's just, you know, common sense. But you know what's funny? I grew up in Indiana. Like, I grew up in Mexico until I was 10. And then from that point forward, I grew up in Indiana. And I did notice, you're right, they do make it seem like in my civil rights class or whatever, American history, they do make it seem like, oh, well, we're better because we're not the South. You know, we're way better in the South. And I'm like, oh, okay. But even now, like, as I'm like, well, now that I said, all these things has been happening, he's been bringing up stuff like, oh, have you read this? Have you read that? I'm like, wait, what? No, I wasn't taught any of that in my American history class. Mm-hmm. I wasn't taught any of this in my civil rights class. What are you talking about? Yes. And then I go back and I read and I'm like, oh my whole goodness, what is this real? Like even terminology, like for example, where carnivals came from, how it was related to the church, what they used to do, like things like that. I'm like, I literally almost vomited when I started to read it. Because I don't mean you guys can go read it or whatever, but I read that they used to get babies, nursing black women that were nursing their babies. They would grab them and they would put them in this pedestal or something, and they would throw balls at the babies when they were full of milk, and they would throw them, black babies, until they puked. I read that and I was like, we did not get taught any of this. In our history classes, a lot of the terminology that we use nowadays, it has such a such a dark beginning. And I'm like, oh my gosh. But no, you're right. Like living in Indiana was very, it was very interesting. You're right. They do feel that way. Well, we're better. But then again, I lived there and I did get called a beaner and all this and that. I've heard people call him names and I'm like, I'm like, it doesn't matter where you're from, you can still be racist, you know?
Yeah. And I guess then a lot of our listeners, I think, would probably say they want to be anti-racist. So I think a lot of our listeners would see it as part of their responsibility as a Christian to be actively peacemaking, which means fighting for justice in places of injustice. That's the difference between like peacemaking and peacekeeping, as you were talking about earlier, Timothy. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of us probably have this default mindset of, yeah, sure, I bet there's places in my life that I can't see or I don't know. But how to inhabit a space, even a space that's predominantly white, and be open to being that wrong about reality is crazy disorienting for most white people. Mm-hmm. Especially when you're supposed to be in charge. You know what I'm saying? Like, you get paid to be in charge, and now, like, you have to lead a group of people through something they can't see that would change everything about how they live their life. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess I'm asking the question under that or behind that is, like, I don't know. What's your wisdom on that? Like, what are some ways that you've seen white folk like be with you and respond to you that you've been blessed by or you've seen them blessed by that you want to commend to the rest of us?
I think I just want to encourage y'all to know the empowerment that is given just to hear lighter hue, the white brothers and sisters talk about these matters, but not talking to defend, talking to understand.
Right. Yeah. That's
and
good.
So that in and of itself, I know it's like, man, I want to do more. And I'm so thankful that for that drive to happen, but please do not negate or take away from communicating. And so it meant so much to me when someone would reach out and say, hey, man, I just have some questions and can we chat? Can we talk? And because for the longest time, like I said, until this year, I did not have a place or space to talk about these matters. So thus many, many, many minorities and people of color will eternalize their pain. And because church wasn't safe. Your pastor won't safe. it to talk about these matters. Oh, are you trying to find race in Middle Rock? Oh, just pray about it. Boy, please.
So
I think, man, just creating conversation, creating the space, and inviting other people to your table is different. I would hope somebody knows a black and a brown minority individual, or and vice versa, that we can invite into that conversation. And I'm just telling you, I write about this in my, I have an upcoming book, my sec in a little bit, but I'm talking about one of the most powerful things you can do in a conversation is bless each other with an I don't know.
Right.
Because when you come to the table with I don't know, you're coming to the table to understand, not to prove. Yeah. And so across the board, we just have horrible communication issues because people talk to win, not understand. And people talk to tweet, not talk. And so, like I said, I just wanted them, because I know people want to do more, but please do not negate or take away from the simple fact of talking about it. And then how can you get involved is use your privilege. I am an able-bodied individual. I'm an able-bodied person. My legs work, thank God, right? And so when I see someone in a wheelchair, again, assuming that they want my help, I always ask. And if they need, I'm gonna help. Right. I'm gonna get involved with what I can do, but I'm also gonna make sure I'm not taking their space. So I'm not going to take their handicap space or whatever, because I know that was a place made for them, that created for them. You know what I mean? So like, find ways to get involved, find ways to speak up, find ways to speak out, like have these conversations with your family. And so I would say that there's something that we're going to give our children, all of us, is that we're going to give them a new starting point. Because all of us are one drawing a line in the sand saying this stops with us. No ignorance stops with us. So right. What if this is just a moment where we're gathering information, where we're gathering and strategizing a plan so we can help raise up a generation to end this thing?
Yeah.
I would say submerging yourself in the culture would also be so helpful. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know a lot of people, for example, that love Mexican food. But they don't necessarily love Mexicans, which I think is, for real. Like,
oddly,
you have no idea the things I've heard. Like, even here, okay, let me just say, we are in this house by the absolute grace of God, literally. We could have never afforded this house. Anyway, long story short, the majority of our neighborhood is white. And one of our neighbors walked up to him.
First day
we moved in, and he had not seen me. And said, oh, I had to move from this place to this place because there was too many Latino people and they're too noisy, they're too this, too that. Oh, and my. As soon as he said that, I walked out. He looked like super awkward. Like, so anyway.
They're here to
try me for real.
Yeah,
white guy's like,
people be trying me.
White Steve be like, oh, there's a black guy. He'll hate on the Latinos with me.
Like, bro.
I don't
and then
know why
out walks his wife.
Yes. Jeez. And then but my point being, like, just submerging yourself in the culture, sometimes it can be so helpful to understand where they're coming from. Yeah. Ask people, why do you feel the way you feel? And I think that's what we're lacking. We want, like he said, we want to be right because we're right, but we don't want to understand the pain of other people. We don't want to go there. We don't want to see what's really, you know. And like, people have been asking me about this whole situation, and I'm just being honest and open about it. And they're like, well, how can we help? I'm like, well, number one, educate yourself. Number two, submerge yourself in the culture so you can get why we think the way we think. Because I'm coming from a whole completely different place than even my husband. Yeah. You know, I'm a woman. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have my own battles that I had to fight through. I'm a Latina woman, which that's another battle in itself. And then him, okay, I would say this. He is a big black man.
6'6", 330 pounds.
So he's not, you're not going to walk into a place and not notice him. We went to a small town one time, and literally, I think he was the only black person in the whole town. Because people were like staring and following him around the store. And anyways, like, I've had to sit down even with him and ask him, why do you feel the way you feel? Why, you know, why are you hurting? Why does this hurt you so much? That is so important. Just asking questions, it would be so
helpful in this situation.
Yeah. Yeah. So kind of bringing all this together and maybe bringing this all to a close here. One of the things I hear that is like a simple thing that all of us can do. I heard somebody say the definition of fragility is that there's no space between stimulus and response. Mm. So fragility is when there's no, and what I think that quote means is that when something that you share as a black man or you as a Latina woman, if that feels threatening to me as a white man, right? Something about my identity, something about the way that I conceive of the world, that kind of thing. For me not to have any gap between hearing that comment and defending myself, right? Uh-huh. That's the definition of fragility. And so I think what I'm hearing in all of this is expand the gap, right? For you, where however that gap is, like expand that gap between what you hear that feels threatening and just like don't respond right away. Just think about it. Think at least a few thoughts to say, wait, that's interesting that I feel defensive when a black man shares that he's hurting because of what he saw on TV, you know, in March. Like, you know what I mean? Like that's interesting. And being able to stay in the conversation, right? And just, and be curious and keep listening.
Yeah.
And allow those, that gap to increase.
I think it's hard sometimes for Christians to understand this because we treat relationships as opportunities just to win souls. So we come to people, like people will go to people for converts, and the moment that they say a prayer, they don't know how to sustain a relationship. They don't know how to do a relationship. Yeah. Yeah. And so I think we need to learn how to do life. Period.
Right.
Yeah.
Like Brian McKnight talks about going back to one. That's before y'all's day. And it's an old love song. Lord. One, like a dream come true. Two, want to be with you. Three, girl, you're playing. I'm looking at my wife right now. Oh. Girl, you're playing to see that you're the only one for me.
Coming up on 10 years here.
Come on. Yes.
Romance has not died down. This is great. Come on.
Yes, right. It really hasn't because we got a baby due in 2 weeks.
Oh, and my. So,
do you really?
Oh,
wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Little baby girl. And so I have not social distance. Glory be to God. But so he has this love song where he talks about going back to one. He says, I'm going to do all these things. I'm going to go back to the basics. I'm going to go back to one. And so I think that is just what we need to do. Yeah. We have so overly complicated Christianity. Mm. And it's raw form that like Jesus, how much ministry did Jesus do just to simply bring simplicity to the gospel, right? Mm-hmm. Can we once again love the Lord our God with all our heart, with all our soul, with all our mind, and all our strength? And can we love our neighbor as ourselves?
Right.
Yeah.
Can we start there, and can we strive that and strive to do that? Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're passionate about, to help people do. Mm-hmm. I firmly believe that, man, God has given me a book that's really going to help that out, and to help people have the conversations, because that's what I really want to do. Is like, I just think we need less soapboxes. Yep. We need more conversation around coffee tables, but that's people need to learn how to talk again.
Tim, and Mari, thank you so much. Do you go by Tim? I just called you Tim, but I realized
either one. Okay, I'm good with Tim or Timothy. I just don't like when a grown man calls me Timmy.
Like, okay, that fair enough. That never.
I draw the line right there.
It never occurred to me, just so you know, to call you Timmy.
Can I share one thing, Timothy, as you were sharing about being a 6'6", 300, and I missed the particularities three plus.
Yes.
black man. I remember having a conversation with a white guy who was 6'6", 300 pounds. He was an ex-offensive lineman at a college football team. And I remember me suggesting to him that people treated him differently because of his stature, and he thought I was full of crap. Mm. Mm. Now, listen, he thought I was full of crap. He told me that his size had no impact on most people and that he did not see anybody treat him differently than anybody else. And I remember this was about 10 years ago when I was first realizing that white people don't see their power. Because, I mean, all white people have power,
But a 6'6", 300-pound white guy has a lot of power. And it just struck me as you were sharing about like being a 6'6", 300-plus-pound black man. There's never been a day in your life when you weren't aware of your size, when you weren't aware of your color, when you weren't aware of how people were reacting to that. Mm-hmm. And that's just, it's like, that's like part of baked into how you navigate the world to stay alive.
Absolutely.
And communicate to people you're not a threat. Yeah. And that you're friendly and you're kind. Yeah. And right? And yes. I'm not angry. I'm still not angry.
Oh my gosh.
He hears me not being
all
angry
all the time. Mm. He's like, why are you mad? He's like, I'm not mad.
No, well, Timothy, I mean, we don't know you that well, but we spent a few hours with you now, right? And like, there's nothing about you that's angry. Mm-hmm. But like, you, in order to survive, you have to be aware of how everybody scripts you when they look at you. Mm-hmm. White people don't have to do that. Mm-hmm. We don't have to pay attention to those things because we're not surviving based upon it. Mm-hmm. We're actually using it, and we don't even know we're using it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so this is part of the... I want to say this is part of the work white people have to do is begin to see how things like their size, their gender, their skin, how it's currency that's doing work. It's capital they're trading on, and you don't have to be aware of it for it to be happening. Mm-hmm. Right? Whereas a lot of BIPOC friends of mine, they have to know about it in order to be alive. For instance, son, here's what you do when you see the sirens, the lights come on behind you.
Totally. Totally.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes. Well, we're waking up to this stuff. You guys are helping us. Thank you. Timothy, Marai, thank you for joining us today.
No doubt.
Listeners, hire these people. Yeah, bring them to your church.
How do we find you? Tell
seriously.
Us how we find you.
Yeah.
Our website is www.tmmonline.org. That's tmmonline.org. And that does not, TMM, just to clarify, TMM doesn't mean Timothy McCain. It means Timothy Mabai. Correct. And the reason why that is so important, why I try my best to make sure I clarify that, because I firmly believe in the ministry, the anointing, the office, the gifting that's on my wife. She is a minister in her own right. In an hour where misogyny is deeply embedded in Christianity today, there needs to be women in ministry desperately. And amen. So yeah, it's Timothy Mathai Ministries, tmmonline.org. And yeah, we can reach us from there.
Yeah, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, everything you can think of. We got it all.
And you have a podcast? I saw that on your website.
Yes. So we have two podcasts. I have where I do motivation and talking about life stuff. It's called TM Motivations, and it's on Spotify and Apple and all this stuff. And we actually launching a new podcast. It's called Saved But Not Churchy. And
I'm the saved. He's the not churchy. Let me clarify that. So I am over saved. Uh-huh. And he's like, okay, I'm, from the hood. So
we just feel like there's a lot of conversations that people aren't having. We need to talk about sex. We need to talk about life. You know what I mean? We need to talk about things. You know what I mean? Because the world, they're going to learn it from porn.
Somewhere.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's great.
All right. Very good. And how about the book? You mentioned you're working on it. We're recording this in December. This interview will probably release in January. Like, when is that coming out, and how can people find that? Or what's it called?
So I have a book coming out called Use Your Jab. And in the book, it is about depression and overcoming and fighting and conquering depression. And it should be out around February. And using your jab, I don't know if any boxers, I love boxing. And a jab is how you set up a shot, and how you create distance and things. And so it's a book about, because this year has been crazy for so many people, and they have found themselves fighting depression, deep sadness. Maybe they've never fought it before. Maybe they fought it every single day. So that comes out. And I also have two books out already. One is called Crowns Are Greater Than Trophies. And that is just charging people to draw a line in the sand regarding their family and break these generational habitual behaviors that has been causing so much pain. And I have a last book called This Is Your Chance. And the subtitle is, it's not opportunity will pass you by. It's more like you will pass by your opportunity. And so I have severe dyslexia and I have to take speech pediments. And so I have a speech pediment and stuttering issues and slurring problems. I had to take speech classes till I was in the fifth grade. And I lived most of my life feeling I was stupid and dumb. It wasn't until I had a revelation that totally rocked my life. And from there, I've been writing books and going to college and all that fun stuff. So anybody who's been feeling like you've been trapped by anxiety and excuses and worry, this book is definitely going to help liberate you from there.
All right. Well, we'll find where those things can be located. We'll put all that in the show notes
for all from a website,
you beloved listeners. Yep. Or just go to that website, tmmonline.org. That's where find these guys. Guys, thanks so much for joining us. It was a real delight to talk to you today.
It's been awesome. Thank you all for having us.
Yes, yep, thank you for having us.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Our show is produced by Ben Sternke, Matt Tebbe, and Ben Hardman. Aaron Sternke does our mixing and mastering. You can check out his work at aaronsternke.com. If you find our podcast helpful, share it with your friends in person and on social media. And don't forget to rate and review us online, as well as subscribe so you don't miss an episode. You can join our Gravity community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join. And hey, we'd love to hear from you. Ask a question, make a comment, send us an idea, a recommendation, recipe, whatever. You can email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. Catch you next time.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.